The GRT Gaming Podcast, episode 495, recorded on March 5th, 2018.
Welcome to the 495th edition of the TV Gaming Podcast and 328th edition of the Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Burke. And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So, let's start with you, TJ. What have you been playing?
Been heavy on Monster Hunter this last week. I was trying to craft my perfect outfit for myself and my cat friend.
Okay. Disco outfit, nice little spanked pantsuit.
Somewhere between Gallant Knight and Snow Kitten.
Now you know that it's Capcom, so it's entirely possible. You know, they probably have a Servbot outfit somewhere out there.
There is a crossover Mega Man outfit for the cat. I know that. Like a pixelated 8-bit Mega Man outfit made of voxels.
But I'm saying they probably have all these little Easter eggs. I wouldn't be surprised if you were Frank, you know, and you tell everybody, you tell the monsters that you've covered war.
I mean, they already made the crossover with Street Fighter and Mega Man so far, so I wouldn't be surprised in the least if they ended up doing that at some point. That would actually be really funny, too.
What Frank character are you talking about?
Frank West from Dead Rising.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's favorite video. Everybody's favorite video game uncle.
How about you, Scott? What have you been playing?
Monster Hunter, actually, as well.
If you both have it on the same platform, then you can go out together and hunt for monsters together.
It's true.
Could.
Do you both have it on the PS4?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, then you can go out and hunt monsters with each other.
Yep. Like I said, I've been playing it. I've been enjoying it, running around the world, collecting different things. And I guess, TJ was right. There's a lot of relaxed time there. It's not all that pressure to get your stuff done. And you do have missions where there's not even a time limit. Just don't get knocked out and you'll be fine. You can collect, whatever you want, or go hunt a bunch of monsters or lizards, actually.
Yeah.
I'm even letting my daughter play, and she's been getting pretty far, too. She actually fought the giant jaguar, so she's getting there, too.
Cool.
It's a fun game.
Expedition mode was a much needed thing for that series. I don't know if it was, I can't speak to the previous Monster Hunter games. If somebody knows that there's been an expedition mode in the previous games, feel free to let us know. But I feel like that's a really, really relaxing fit for that game, is to just be able to not be on a mission, not be on a time limit, and just go out into the wild and do whatever you feel like.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of area to explore, and it just feels really cool because you feel like you're on the frontier kind of thing. And your only civilization is this, small settlement, and there is a foothold into this land that they want to explore, and you're trying to find signs of this magma dragon, and it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And the magma dragon is like, it's like a colossus in Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah.
So it's like the size of a skyscraper. It's a giant, and you fight it and actually climb around on it at certain points. So those are interesting parts of the game.
So you don't mind the grind at all?
No, it really doesn't feel like a grind. It really just feels like you're exploring and doing what you feel like.
A monster hunting version of Stardew Valley.
I would suppose so. I mean, what do you feel, Scott? Have you ever felt like it was grindy at all?
Not really. I mean,
You see, that's what happens when you're invested in the world that's around you, that rather than as a game, you're basically playing it as an actual explorer. So it's not grindy. It's more like spending your time in an alternate reality, getting ready to do stuff like I wouldn't say like a job, but like an expedition and all the stuff that goes into preparing for the expedition. You know, I think the preparation for the expedition is probably the biggest part of the game for you, rather than actually fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of prep things. You have your meals that you can do, and you can customize them, and you have your armor and your weapons to upgrade or create or whatever you want. So it doesn't feel like there's any absolute, you must do it this way, and you have to fight 10 or 20 of these things to advance in the levels. It's just, no, it's just, this is the mission, now go find this thing, and then you heal the Jagras, and then you have to hunt and capture the Jagras, and then you have to, and it's like it's an evolving story, and it doesn't feel like some other games where you have to fight like the same monster over and over and over again.
You can, and that's certainly going to be a part of it if you want a certain amount, but like even when you're on a mission hunting a certain monster, the other monsters still exist in the in the area that you're in, and you can totally deviate from that monster and just like run into those other ones by sheer accident or on purpose if you want to actually kill them along the way.
Yeah, I think this reminds me where they are, so you can find them very easily.
This reminds me of what Yahtzee was talking about, you know, World of Warcraft, in which he asked someone who was raiding for epic gear, "Well, why are you raiding for epic gear?" And he says, why are you raiding? Because I want to get epic gear. Why are you getting epic gear? Because I want to do better on raids.
And that is true, because like a lot of the monsters that you fight, the weakness or the defense that you can get from their armor or the weapon that you make from them is strong or weak against them. So, you're literally building a sword from a dragon to be able to take on that dragon better.
Well, at least there it makes sense, because in World of Warcraft, it just felt like you were replacing your gear every so often.
Well, you're replacing your gear to go on epic raid, you know, go on multiplayer against other people. You know?
But I didn't want to play multiplayer against other people. I wasn't interested in that.
Well, there
I'm
you
still
go.
Not.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that you can easily do Monster Hunter World by yourself and not even bother with other people.
You are going to play together, aren't you?
We can. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I mean, I play with my brother-in-law over it, and I have another friend, Sean, who also, I think, plays it. So it's like, but it's co-op.
You know, any game that is better with co-op, even if you play Aliens Colonial Marines, it's better with co-op, because at least you and your friend are laughing at the game together while playing it.
Oh, sure. I don't mind playing by myself, though. I actually feel really peaceful.
When you play Monster Hunter, do you have a box of tissues with you?
Oh, jeez. I don't know what that implication is.
Well, you know, you like said you like to play with yourself, so...
I see.
Anyways.
I will say this, though. What? I will say this, though. Meowskiller Chef, the cat who cooks for you, is the best damn video game character of the year. If he doesn't get an award at the Game Awards, Jeff Keighley is a fraud and a hack.
Let me ask you a question. Is this the game with realistic cooking?
Not at all.
I think it's maybe
I'm thinking Final Fantasy 15. Yeah.
There is a cat. There is a buff ass cat that whenever you go to get some food, him and his little cat friends prepare it for you. And then he puts a sprig of honey, or he puts a sprig of mint, or like a little thing on a chicken leg, and he looks so damn proud.
So meticulous. He's like, bing!
Meowskiller Chef is the best character in a game.
Yeah, I will note that today Final Fantasy 15 was released for PC. And already people are talking about what kind of mods they're going to make for it.
Yeah, because it's going to be mod-friendly. That's actually pretty cool.
Even if it wasn't mod friendly, they'd still make mods.
Yes,
I think
but
the advantage that the PC has over being released like months after the console version has is that everybody's familiar enough with it already that in the back of their heads, while they were playing it on console, that you know, I'd like to make a mod that does this, or I'd like to make a mod that does that.
Yeah,
I'd love PC.
So what have you been playing, Jonah?
So I'll tell you what I've not been playing. I stopped playing Prey.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Because the combat is sucks, and there's too many key cards. It's like every time I come up at the door, no, you need a proper key card for this. You know, Arcane, you may love System Shock, but you don't really understand it. I haven't even started developing my monster powers yet, where you get to, you know, like pretend you're the vase or something. It was just, you know, it just got too annoying. So that goes back. My next game I have on my Gamefly return is not going to be Monster Hunter, which I, you know, but it's going to be Need for Speed Payback. And I'll be the criticisms I heard about Need for Speed Payback is that it's so bland. So we'll see. I've always been a Need for Speed fan when it started thinking it was Burnout. So we'll see. One game that's out now, which everybody's been raving about, which I was hoping I was going to get on my Gamefly thing, is Sea of Thieves. And there's this article in Forbes magazine talking about how Sea of Thieves is actually the true next-gen game. And I guess he never played Guns of Icarus, but he talks about how normally when you're piloting a vehicle, you become the vehicle. Like if you're in a driving game, you become the car and all that stuff. When you play Sea of Thieves, you do not become the boat. You're just operating the boat, and the boat reacts realistically. And I've seen videos, and I can see what they're talking about, you know. And if, you know, someone has to go out to the sails, but you know what? If you're at the steering wheel, you can't see anything. You know how you get the map? Someone else goes down into the captain's quarters and looks at the map and tells you which way you should be going. And they can't say north, south, west, or east. They have to say, well, okay, make a turn here, and I'll let you know when you've turned enough.
Hmm.
You know, so a lot of the game is manning this boat. And, you know, when you have that much investment in something like that, you start to love your boat. In any game, when you're forced to deal with something over and over and over again, you know, you sort of get attached to it. So I can imagine how bad it is when some people decide, you know, we're going to wreck their fun and just wreck their boat. But that's entirely part of the game, though, of course. You're pirates.
You know? I think there'll be a little bit of that in Pillars of Eternity 2, where you get to customize your ship and you get to man it with crew and equipment.
Yeah, but in this case, Scott, it's all first person, and you never leave first person.
Right, but you're still managing a boat. That's
yeah. Well, you're managing a boat in Assassin's Creed 4, but it's not the same thing. Anyways. One of the great things is that it's Xbox Anywhere, so if you get it for Windows 10, you have it for the Xbox One and vice versa. And you get to do cross-play platform with it, you know. So at some point, maybe we can all get it and we'll be on the boat. We'll do a podcast entirely from the boat. Talking while we're trying to dig up buried treasure.
And eat bananas with the peels on them.
Yeah, yeah. For those who don't know, TJ's still obsessed with that joke from E3.
It is one of my favorite things, only because of the things that came after, like videos of people actually just chomping into either a pineapple or a banana with the peel on.
But the thing is that the developers knew this and they had a response for that at E3. But I've also been playing a lot of Civ 6. And also, I started playing XCOM again, just because, you know, sometimes on my computer, I want to play something that's turn-based, you know, so that I can always get up and walk away when I need to do something. Because the good thing about turn-based games is that they just stay there and wait for you.
Mm-hmm. I do like that as well.
Yeah. And I assume you've been playing a lot of Civ 6 there, Scott.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So after, what is it, 2 weeks now? What is your impression of Rise and Fall?
I've enjoyed it. Like I said, I like the going through the eras and earning building my timeline, building my history. It like you said, on the passing, it gives you investment into your game that you're playing. So it's like a story, you know. It's like, this is what I did as this civilization, and these are the things I built, and these are the quests I went on, and you know, maybe the wars I fought, or, you know, whatever.
One of the things is I'm starting to not fear Dark Ages that much anymore, because oh, yeah. It's actually pretty easy to get Heroic Age after a Dark Age.
Oh, yeah. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. I mean, Because I was imagining...
The only thing is that you have lower loyalties in your outlying cities. So you're in a dark age. You have the worst time to, you know, it's the worst time. It's the most possible thing for one of your cities to flip to someone else.
Yeah, but you could still do just fine in a dark age. It's not as bad. Like, I was imagining my times in Civ 5 when I run out of money and suddenly I'm losing science and losing gold and everything, and I can't, you know, that sort of thing really stops you from being able to win. This is just like, you know, people are a little upset with you, but, you can manage it.
There is that policy that allows you to get loyalty in a city with a governor in it.
A lot of people like the Dark Age policies a lot more. There's one for trade routes, give you food and production.
Isolationism is the best.
Yeah.
Especially if you already have a large thing and you don't need to expand anymore.
Mm-hmm. That is good. Then you can build into your own empire, and I think that inner trade routes actually help your loyalty. So that's a way to balance that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. We said this before, is that Civ 6 was the first Civ game to come out since 3. That was already felt complete out of the box. And Rise and Fall just made it feel even more complete.
Mm-hmm.
So, for those of you who still haven't played Rise and Fall, I'm looking side-eyed at TJ there. You really ought to try it. I will say I don't like being in a Dark Age because it becomes a lot grayer and darker, and it's harder to see things. That's the only thing I don't really like about a Dark Age.
Huh? Yeah, I like the UI, and I guess it can be suddenly startling when you go from a Dark Age.
Yeah, all of a sudden everything is bright and golden.
Yeah. But I still like that they did that. It adds more to the game.
Well, it feels like you really came out of a Dark Age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally. Yes.
You know, as much as I like the timeline, I'd like there to be a little bit more story to it. Sort of like, if you remember playing Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri, there was a story to that, you know. Now, it was a hardline story in which, you know, it would have these text things that come up. But I can see in Civ, in Rise and Fall, if you have more of a narrative going in terms of not just, American scholars are the first to, have a boat, you know, and all that stuff. Something a little more literary to it. But that's nitpicking, you know. And it'll be interesting to see if they do another expansion, because every Civ game has had 2 expansions. I can't imagine they're just going to have 1. Although it's hard to imagine what they would possibly expand.
Well, I mean, I was kind of surprised of what they did do. So there's still the diplomacy that can be worked on and get a diplomatic victory. So that can be in the next expansion.
I can't tell you how much more enjoyable it is to be able to not have 500 apostles coming into your country and converting your cities, and every time you complain, they say, no, we'll stop doing it. Okay, send more in. Yeah. At least one of the civs had the gall to say, oh, no, we're going to do it anyway, so what are you going to do about it? But they still only sent 1 apostle.
I think they'll come up with something to expand on. There's always something you can do.
I know they made Cassus Belli a lot more potent, though. At least there's that.
I was thinking something they could do is maybe put in satellites for like a late game mechanic to make that a little bit more interesting. You could have spy satellites or just, I don't know, go crazy with it, do things with culture or science.
Imagine if they allowed you to colonize the moon. You know, it's not the going to Alpha Centauri, but you are able with future tech to start colonizing the moon.
That would be interesting.
You have another territory up there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're going to move to the gaming flashback, and this week it's going to be Fallout 3. Fallout 3 is an action role-playing open-world video game developed by Bethesda Game Studios and published by Bethesda. The third major installment of the Fallout series, it is the first game to be created by Bethesda since it bought the franchise from I'm really screwing this up today. Let me try it right from the start. Fallout 3 is an action role-playing open-world video game developed by Bethesda Game Studios and published by Bethesda Softworks. the third major installment in the Fallout series. It is the first game to be created by Bethesda since it bought the franchise from Interplay. The game marks a major shift in the series by using 3D graphics and real-time combat, replacing the 2D isometric graphics and the turn-based combat of previous installments. It was released worldwide on October 2008 for Microsoft Windows, PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360. I will note that the Microsoft Windows version was Windows Live, so you could get achievements for it. And that actually factors into something I'm going to talk about after we do the game description. The game is set within the post-apocalyptic open-world environment that encompasses a region consisting of the ruins of Washington, D.C., and much of the countryside to the west of it, referred to as the Capital Wasteland. It takes place within Fallout's usual setting of a world that has been deviated from an alternate timeline thanks to atomic age technology, which eventually led to its devastation by a nuclear apocalypse in the year 2077, referred to as the Great War, caused by a major international conflict between United States and China over natural resources and the last remaining supplies of untapped petroleum. The main story takes place in the year 2277, around 36 years after the events of Fallout 2, of which it is not a direct sequel. Players take control of the inhabitant of Vault 101, one of several underground shelters created before the Great War to protect about a thousand humans from nuclear fallout, and who is forced to venture out into the Capital Wasteland to find their father after he disappears from the vault under mysterious circumstances. They eventually find themselves seeking to complete their father's work while fighting against the Enclave, the corrupt remnants of the former U.S. government that seeks to use it for their own purposes. Fallout 3 was met with a critical acclaim and received a number of Game of the Year awards, praising the game's open-ended gameplay and flexible character level system, and is considered one of the best video games of all time. The NPD Group estimated that Fallout 3 sold over 610,000 units during its initial release in October 2008, performing better than Bethesda's previous game, The Elder Scrolls VI Oblivion, which sold nearly 500,000 units in its first month. The game received post-launch support, with Bethesda releasing 5 downloadable add-ons. So here's the thing about the PC version. I was going to get the Xbox 360 version, except the fact that I could get achievements for Xbox Live from the PC version made, okay, I'll play it on my PC. And I'm glad I did, because here's the thing about Fallout 3. I found years later playing it on a console, it's unplayable on console. On PC, it was very playable, and I enjoyed it. And on Xbox 360, not so much. I found the combat bad on console, but the combat was great on PC.
Mouse and keyboard is the way to go.
Yeah.
I only ever played it on console, so... For me, it was never really... The combat was... I mean, I didn't know any better, I guess. But
the VAT system. We should talk about the VAT system. So you can play the game like a shooter, and even like a third person, but I never went into third person, you know, in which you fire. But the VAT system, if you wanted, and it was almost necessary in a lot of ways, would pause the game, and you could fire at a specific body part of your enemy. If you did enough damage to an already damaged part, it would jib. So there was nothing like doing a headshot that caused their entire head to explode.
As far as I was concerned, like, I didn't really know of any other way to play the game except for on console. So I never really had an issue per se with the style of aiming or anything, because I didn't have anything to compare it to. To me, it was just a pretty good RPG. And granted, like, years would pass and Fallout New Vegas would come out, and then I would realize that...
How much better Obsidian did it? the bugs?
Yeah, I mean, Obsidian just, like, had it figured out. They took everything I didn't like about Fallout 3 and mashed it. And
you liked Fallout 3 more than New Vegas. And
I know a lot of people that say that. I know a lot of people that do, because there, a lot of people just don't like the New Vegas setting, because it is a lot of.
It's just that New Vegas was a little too open ended. At least Fallout 3 guided you a little bit without actually guiding you. You know, New Vegas, you went north. Guess what? Bam, bam, bang. You're dead. In 2 seconds.
Now there is a sign
south.
Now there is a point where if you're low level, it'll stop you and say, if you go that way, you're gonna die. So we would like to let you know to turn back now before you die. But but I do know a lot of people that enjoyed Fallout 3 a lot more because the idea of like the Washington D.C. area was a more interesting setting for them. And I get that. It is a pretty neat little setup. I do like the idea of Megaton. I like the idea of Tenpenny Tower and as you get closer to like
Tower annoyed the hell out of me.
You did? It did?
Yeah, because here's the thing. No matter what you do in Tenpenny Tower, you're going to end up being a creep. If you help the people at Tenpenny Tower, you just massacre the ghouls, right? The thinking ghouls, not the brain dead ones. Uh-huh. However, if you help the ghouls, their leader decides, you know, let's kill all the humans in the tower anyway. Even though they invited them in, he decides, let's kill them all. And then when you go back, all the people are dead and the ghouls are just standing there saying, oh, well, okay, fine, whatever. There is no good outcome to that part, you know. I will say that my solution is just to go up to the tower, shoot a Tenpenny in the head, and you get positive karma for that. Grab his great sniper rifle and his clothes and then leave. And no one is the wiser. No one ever goes up to check on Tenpenny. Oh, this is what I also do, by the way. I sneak up on the head ghoul when he's talking to the people in the tower while he's on the intercom. And I sneak in a little grenade and walk away and kill him by blowing him up. And that also gets you the achievement Psychotic Prankster. Mm-hmm. But then I don't even deal with a ghoul quest. I just kill their asshole leader and leave them in peace down there.
I think one of my favorites was
it's Three Dog.
I did enjoy Three Dog, but I wish
before you go on, Fallout 3 is the first game that I ever saw a getting achievements and getting noticed for doing neutral runs, in which you're not Paragon, you're not Renegade, you're actually neutral.
Yeah.
No game can really do that. If you do neutral, usually you're screwing yourself because you don't get any bonuses for being neutral. But if you're neutral in the game, you get certain perks are available to you.
We are far too used to BioWare games in which being neutral totally screws you in the end. It was one of those games where like you could actually go down the middle path, not be too evil, not be too good, and also
get special perks that only people on the neutral side could get.
Right. But yeah, I did enjoy Three Dog. I wish that there was a personality as good as Three Dog when it came to the radio in New Vegas.
You don't like the guy from Fallout 4 who you have to help to be more confident?
I don't mind him, but there was no one quite like Three Dog.
You can also kill Three Dog if you wanted to.
I like Nick Valentine. I thought he was pretty good, pretty personable.
Yeah, but he's talking about radio DJs.
Okay. Yeah. Just as far as like the radio commentary went, I really enjoyed I don't mind the DJ in New Vegas, but I feel like he loops a little too frequently. Like they didn't give that guy enough dialogue. As far as the quests go, I really like the ghoul that was turned into a tree and attracted a cult.
Yeah, but he's actually from Fallout 2.
He's from Fallout 1, actually. He's a recurring character throughout the entire series.
Yeah.
He plays
the entire wasteland, which is nice and green and verdant, too.
Uh-huh.
I loved finding the alien spacecraft and then taking the weapon that could one-shot the Death Claws.
Yeah.
It was, hey, Death Claw, guess what? Now I have a ray gun. Blam, you're dead. The only problem with that, of course, is that there was no ammo available for it. All the ammo was in the gun, so when you ran out of the ammo for the gun, you ran out of, you know. But that's okay, because it was reserved for Death Claws.
My favorite was, I think one of my favorite weapons in the entire Fallout universe came from Fallout New Vegas, in which you can turn the solar station into an orbital weapon.
So let's talk about the ending for Fallout 3. Okay, spoiler time for a 10-year-old game. Okay, so at the end of Fallout 3, the base game,
mm-hmm.
At the end, you had a choice. You had three choices. Either you could let it blow up, and it had a special ending for that, or you could go into it, into the radiation chamber and fix it yourself, but then you die. Or you can send Sarah into the radiation chamber, and then she dies. So how could this be solved? Oh, there's a super mutant who's on your side. His name is Fox, if I remember correctly. He's immune to radiation. And when you say, why don't you do it? He says, no, I can't do this. This is your destiny. Really? This is my destiny? I have to make a decision for my destiny? Really? You're not going to do it because you don't why you're just a, you're a prick, aren't you, Fox? Now, the reason why I mentioned that is the broken steel expansion. Suddenly Fox said, oh yeah, I'm immune to radiation, let me do it.
they changed it like retroactively where he actually would go in there.
Because the broken steel expansion happens after the story. So you have to have the Vault 101 guy come out, you know, be able to survive that. So, and the other thing is, if you decided to do it yourself with the broken steel, you pass out from radiation poisoning, and you're saved, because the original game you die,
mm-hmm.
you know, and or Sarah dies. I like how Sarah just snarks at you and tells you what an asshole you are for making her do it. She gets mentioned in Fallout 4, and everything that she wanted, the new guy, I forget his name, and the Pridwin, said, fuck you, I'm going to do it my way. So poor Sarah, was it Hawk? No.
Either way, the writers over at Bethesda really try to make you out to be an asshole for not wanting to be Vault Saya.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, one of the things about Fallout 3, and we forgot to mention it, is that the game begins with you as a baby, and that's how you do the character creation. You actually are, they actually give birth to you. You're actually coming out of the canal, the vaginal canal, at the beginning of the game. I don't know many games that did that, in which you're role playing the entire life of your character, and the first moments in the game are you coming out of the vaginal canal.
Yeah.
I should mention that your father is played by Liam Neeson.
Yes. And the game is
the opening is narrated, of course, by I forgot his name all of a sudden. You know, Beauty and the Beast guy.
Gary Oldman, isn't it?
Ron Perlman, right.
Ron Perlman.
War never changes.
Also, the music was done by Einar Zur, who does fantastic. That's something that people don't really think about with Fallout 3, although they will think of the ink spots, you know, because the first trailer for Fallout 3 had I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire by the Ink Spots, which was pitch perfect for the game. But Einar Zur's score was amazing. He also went on to do Dragon Age Origins too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that like Fallout 3 was a good entry point for the style that it was going to set up for the rest of the Fallouts. It did a good job as far as setting up a basis for that. And then, I mean, it laid the foundation, and then we got Fallout New Vegas, and New Vegas was much better.
Should we talk about Fallout 3 and Van Buren?
Yeah, I feel like we ought to. Okay, I mean,
I know what Scott is thinking. You know, I really wish Fallout 3 had been isometric RPG like the first. Well, it was supposed to be. There was something called Fallout 3 that was in development, and it's unofficially called the Van Buren Edition, in which Fallout 3 is in the same style as Fallout 1 and 2, and it's an isometric RPG, you know, which I guess Wasteland 2 ended up being, you know. So people who wanted to have that got it with Wasteland 2 and 3. It's, you know, I backed that as well, so.
Yeah, Van Buren was basically BlackRock's, was it BlackRock? Was it what they were called?
I don't remember.
Black Isle. It was Black Isle Studios making their version of the game, and then eventually Bethesda bought the rights from Interplay and made their version of the game, and the Van Buren edition by Black Isle got shut down. And then, of course, we all know Black Isle eventually people from Black Isle left to go form was it?
I'm sorry. No, they made Obsidian, that's right.
Yes. BlackRock eventually, the people from BlackRock eventually left to go and form Obsidian, who would conveniently get the game back when it came to New Vegas. It's a shame to see that
actually, some of them also went to do In Exile, which is, by the way, whenever you do a Kickstarter project, you'll notice there's a lot of cooperation between Obsidian and In Exile, like when you did Pillars of Eternity. Oh, by the way, Wasteland 2 is on this other Kickstarter by, you know. So there's a lot of cooperation between those two studios.
With how much...
They also are telling them to back Bard's Tale 4. That was another game.
With how much Obsidian has gone back to the isometric style, I actually wonder why they have never revisited the what they have for Van Buren and sort of sought to make that a full game.
Yeah, In Exile was created by the founder of Interplay.
It depends if they have the rights to actually do anything with it.
To that, I would say, don't make it a Fallout game. Make it its own game. Like, they've already, at this point, made so many different isometric fantasy fiction RPGs. Why not just take the files from Van Buren and create a new universe with it?
You know what I would like to see? I would like to see another Jagged Edge.
Hmm.
Jagged Edge is basically Fallout, but set in modern times with mercenaries. And also, it's a game in which you could have friction between your party members, just like, you know, Baldur's Gate. So, anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Take it away, TJ.
Alrighty. The state of Washington passes law to protect net neutrality from Game Informer. The state of Washington has become the first state in the U.S. to pass a law protecting net neutrality. The FCC, led by Chairman Ajit Pai, voted 3-2 along party lines to remove Obama-era regulation that prevented internet providers from treating content unevenly. Under current rules, internet providers cannot charge extra fees to work around any blocks or limitations of internet content they oppose. The regulation...
Not oppose, but it could be the same thing anyway.
The regulation is currently set to dissolve completely on April 23rd, but Washington is looking to protect its residents from that dissolution. The state legislature introduced House Bill 2282 after debate about passing a law or establishing net neutrality through executive order. It was determined through floor debate that passing net neutrality as a law would make it more difficult to challenge in court. From the text of the bill, quote, a person engaged in provision of broadband internet access service in Washington state may not block lawful content, applications, services, or non-harmful devices subject to network management, impair or degrade lawful internet traffic, or engage in paid prioritization.
In other words, if you have advertising dollars from Taco Bell, they're not going to block you. You won't get slow service when you're looking for McDonald's, you know, that sort of thing.
Right. The bill has been signed into law by Governor Jay Inslee and goes into effect in 90 days, June 6th, or whenever net neutrality rules dissolve. While Washington is the first state to pass a law concerning network neutrality, California, New York, and Massachusetts also have bills proposed that would provide similar protections. Good.
You know, the thing about this creep, Ajit Pai, we're talking about someone who invented 2 million signatures that wanted net neutrality gone. And they showed how it was just mass produced. Whenever you lie, then you know you're doing something bad. You know,
yeah.
You never tell the truth to do something bad. No. You lie and you make up stuff. You know, if you have to make up stuff, then what you're doing is probably not really good.
And then he had the gall to fucking make that stupid ass YouTube video. Pretty much, here's all the things you can do without net neutrality. Look at me. I'm one of the cool kids. No, you're not. You're a piece of shit. And you took dollars to pass an agenda that nobody wants. Yeah.
Well, hopefully this guy who's running around, this Nunberg guy, is torpedoing Trump right now. By the way, we should mention that for a second. Trump said that he wanted to meet with the video game bigwig. He said he was meeting with video game leaders. And Issa said, what? This is the first we've heard of this.
Yes.
Maybe Trump was referring to a birthday party he was going to have with people in Mario and Sonic costumes.
Trump thinks like people like Bill Gates are controlling the internet, and that's who he has to go talk to. But
yeah. Eventually, it was finally determined that I think it was said that he's going to be meeting with representatives from the ESRB. That was what was going around today. So no,
that's a lie. And the ESRB goes, what?
Yeah, I haven't seen any.
We already have ratings.
Yeah, it's called the ESRB.
Now, here's a question I always wanted to ask, and not enough people ask it. So, if video games and movies create violent behavior in people, then why aren't other countries who see the same movies and play the same exact games react the same way?
It's because it's not the issue.
These are only in the United States.
I mean, this is a subject that has been carried on with debate and research for decades, since the 90s of Mortal Kombat and Night Trap. Right, and
here's the thing.
And not only has research...
Let me just interrupt for a moment. Today, a 44-year-old nutcase decided in the Netherlands he wanted to go into a school and kill people. But since guns were not available, he went in with knives, and he was chased off by high school students throwing their book bags at him.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, not only that, but like research has proven over the course of the last two decades that not only do video games not increase likelihood of violence in people, they actually decrease likelihood of violence in people.
To me, that's irrelevant, though. I'm just saying, you know, if it happens here and nowhere else, then all things being equal, there's something wrong with here.
I think everything put together means that at this point, video games as the problem, quote unquote, is the lazy rhetoric of people with an agenda that are trying to distract.
It's the constant scapegoating. You know, it's either at first it was jazz, then it was weed, and then it was D&D, then it was that punk.
Well, you can go even further back. We can go back to when ballet was considered subversive, and The Marriage of Figaro was banned because apparently it caused unhealthy thoughts between the lower classes on the upper class.
You know? Yeah.
So we're getting off topic here. Let's get back to net neutrality here. And you know. I am giggling at all these neocon nerds who are now upset. Dudes, you voted these people into office. They don't like you. Why are you helping them?
Yeah, I mean, I have a friend, and I will say this loosely. He is a friend of mine. He is a good friend, but we disagree on some things. And one of the things we disagreed on was whether or not internet is a utility. And his rhetoric was, I don't use the internet to pay my bills or make money. And I'm like, you don't use a washing machine to pay your bills or make money, but you need it because otherwise your clothes would reek and you wouldn't be able to get a job, you idiot. And it's like people that are pushing for net neutrality. Okay, common ground people like you and me on the ground floor that actually argue for net neutrality are literally arguing against their own interests by saying that internet should not be a utility because everybody uses the internet on some level or another, and if they don't, then they're probably 90 years old and asking their 16-year-old grandson to help them use the internet to do something they need to do.
You know, there is a country that doesn't have net neutrality, and I think it's Luxembourg, and you have to pay separately for all these things, you know? And that's what you're, you know, I hope you enjoy paying a separate account on your internet just to use Netflix.
Yeah.
You have to pay it twice, once the internet company, then to Netflix.
I mean, we take for granted what we can do with the internet with net neutrality. I mean, being able to pay
for granted. I think a lot of people, other people do, though.
I think, yeah, a lot of people do. I mean, I can pay my taxes, do my job, and then jump on this podcast with you guys all in 2 hours.
Now, if I was smart, I would create a virtual net, because that's what people can do these days, is create their own virtual server, which allows them to do whatever the hell they want, you know, because there's no way to discern what that net is doing.
Yeah.
I forgot what it's called, a virtual net? Anyways.
You do not want to give power to cable companies. It is historically a bad idea.
Yeah. Although I will say, you know, hopefully it'll happen. What's happened to phones is that, remember, you used to have to pay to do long distance phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't. Although that's another thing. Here's an extra charge for using your computer as a phone. Goodbye, Skype.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean,
you know, the other thing is that there are too many companies which have a vested interest in net neutrality, which is good. I mean, when you have people like Electronic Arts and Microsoft and all these other people, and Google especially, you know, who do not want net neutrality, who do not want the end of net neutrality, you know. What's interesting is that people don't. One of the things that bothers me, though, is that Google is a contributor to the NRA, and no one seems to realize that. Until they found it on, it's not on any of the online documents, but if you go to an NRA function, one of the sponsors says, hey, guess what, NRA is Google.
Yeah,
but on the other hand, you know, there are some companies that donate to everybody because they want to be on their side, so they donate to the Republicans and Democrats and all that stuff. But you know, Google's a monopoly that has to be sliced up like Ma Bell.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Name all the ways you can make money doing videos. Well, there's YouTube, and there's and then you have to come up with maybe Vimeo. Oh wait, there was they're no longer around.
Yeah, Daily Motion still is out there somewhere.
Yeah, Daily Motion is where you can get uncopyrighted stuff. They don't care. No one cares. So no one ever looks there.
The wild, wild west of video land.
Yeah. Although right now, YouTube is starting to get its ass beat by Twitch.
Yes.
Twitch is bragging about it.
Which is Twitch good. Is
telling Google, you know what? If you're shitty to video game players, guess what? We have this shiny over here that people have been using for years to make money with video games. So come over to our side.
Yes. And you can make videos over on Twitch and put them on the interwebs. Yes.
They'll tell Konami when you want to spoil Persona 5, they'll stick their both middle fingers up and say, go away, Konami. We're making you money.
Atlas. That's Atlas America.
Atlas, whatever. You know what I mean.
But,
I hear that Metal Gear Solid – what was the new Metal Gear Solid game called?
Metal Gear Solid Survive.
Yeah, it's doing really poorly.
Yeah, terrible.
And is it because of anything with Hideo Kojima or bugginess? It's just that I don't think many people have even heard of it until like a week ago.
A lot of people had heard of it, but everybody laughed about it. Like, why would you do a zombie survival game with Metal Gear? That is,
why wouldn't you, actually, now that I think about it? But anyways.
Only because it's the dumbest of ideas.
They did it for Call of Duty. They did it for Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, but they didn't make the entire game out of those.
Hello, Red Dead Redemption Undead Nightmare was a standalone game.
That was an expansion.
It was a standalone game. You didn't need to buy Red Dead Redemption to play it. We're going to move on to the next item. Rumor, a new XCOM 2 expansion may be coming soon. And this comes from Shack News. It's been somewhat quiet since Firaxis Games released the War of the Chosen expansion for XCOM 2, but that may be changing soon. Some fans have spotted what seems to be evidence that the developer is working on a new expansion. Game Watcher reports, hey, that sounds familiar. You ever heard of this Game Watcher site?
Mm-hmm.
It might be vaguely familiar. Reports there's been a lot of activity around XCOM 2's Steam page as of late. Fans even caught a listing for a new piece of DLC in the Steam database, but it's currently just called SteamDB Unknown App 785300 and was added a couple of months ago. It's clear what fans Game Watcher references, but we'll try to attribute credit and figure it out. Beyond this bit of info, there's no telling what Firaxis has in store. So that, you see, the thing about that is that It's a testing site. That's basically all the unknown app is. What it means is that they're trying out either a patch. You know, they could be trying out a patch. they could be trying out other things. It doesn't have to be a new expansion. Although I will say, you know, I'm hoping for a new expansion because here's the thing. War of the Chosen sold really, really well. And, you know, a company's thing. You know, it made money. Let's make more of that.
Yes. I'm happy to see that Firaxis is moving on to something new. Well, I mean, in the way that they should. I'm always, always, always for more XCOM. And I can't wait to see what they come up with.
Yeah. I've been playing War of the Chosen lately because I found these little buttons on it. They say, oh, double the length of the Avatar project? Yes, please. Oh, I will say the last game I played, it's sort of like I got to a point in which the Avatar project was either at 0 or 1 for the last quarter of the game until I decided finally to do the final assault, simply because I kept on beating down. Sort of, I could have made that game go on forever if I really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hopefully they're making XCOM 3, which would be Terror from the Deep.
Yeah.
They tease the hell out of it in the ending of XCOM 2. There's something from the deep coming. Oh, really? You're finally going to do Terror from the Deep, huh?
I'm here for it. I'm ready for it.
Scott, you don't play XCOM 2, do you?
No, I don't. I have not.
Why not? It's an isometric strategy role-playing game, tactical strategy game.
I've heard it's RNG from hell, and that doesn't.
No, count. Here's the thing. I play on easy now. I mean, I played on regular. Now I just play on easy just to enjoy the story.
I mean,
you don't have to play on Iron Man.
Your fears are founded. You can be standing right next to someone with a shotgun and with a 95% hit chance of hitting, and just. Your bullets just turned into the magic bullets from John F. Kennedy, and except in the opposite way that they hit nothing.
Although,
yeah, also my personal preferences lean towards fantasy, and this is wholly into sci-fi. And the character models just look like they look like the sci-fi versions of World of Warcraft, and I'm not finding any interest.
I will, you know, here's the thing about XCOM, the first one and this one, and also the original one, the one from 1994, I think it was, 1995, are strangely addictive. It's sort of like, you know, when you start getting into researching things and starting finding, it's like you start getting hooked, you know. Do you ever watch Honest Trailers, by the way?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Your contact is played by the same guy who does the Honest Trailers.
Hello, Commander.
I forgot his name. Anyways. But yes, the same guy. And which made it really funny when he actually did an Honest Trailer of XCOM saying how sexy the Commander's voice was. It was strangely sexy. Anyways. We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
State of Decay 2 will be released in May. This from VG247. Microsoft exclusive State of Decay 2 has been given a release date. Those disappointed over the delay for State of Decay 2 last year can look forward to its release in May. I assume this is a zombie game, right?
Yeah.
Okay. According to developer Undead Labs, State of Decay 2 is a true sequel that took everything fans loved from the original, but is more dangerous and unpredictable co-op experience. Each of the characters in State of Decay 2 have their own backstories and motivations. The game also features expanded options to manage the player's community and developer base. State of Decay 2 also features cross-platform co-op, that's cool, allowing the player to join up to 3 other friends on Xbox One or Windows 10 PC. Of course, not PlayStation. That's silly of me.
Well, Microsoft is backing this thing. It's not going to happen. It's like saying Shadow of the Colossus is going to be on the Xbox. No, it's not.
But yet we can cross-play Minecraft on both Sony
Microsoft is not stupid because they already know they have millions of people who play it on the PS3 and PS4 and PSP. They're not going to give away those fans just because, you know.
Well, they're also putting Minecraft on Nintendo DS now. It's crazy.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's more about, you see, you have to thank Mojang for that.
Yeah.
Which I can be, what's it called, established a data, you know, not database, but a player base, a fan base on every single platform imaginable. That when Microsoft bought it, they, you know, Microsoft said, well, you know what? You're doing what works. We're just buying you just, you know, just to enjoy your money. Do whatever you want. Here's the money to do whatever you want. Just make it more of that and better.
Yeah. So the standard edition will be available for $30, and the State of Decay 2 Ultimate Edition will cost $50. The latter features 4 days early access beginning May 18th, along with the Independence Pack and the Daybreak Pack. The packs will be available at later release date. The Ultimate Edition will also include a download token for a bonus copy of the console version, State of Decay Year 1 Survival Edition. State of Decay 2 will release Xbox One and Windows 10 PC as Xbox Play Anywhere and Xbox Games Pass title May 22nd.
You know, the fact that they say it's going to be more dangerous and unpredictable, that is sort of like, oh, maybe I shouldn't play it. Because here's the thing about the first State of Decay. There's a reason why I called it Zombie Tamagotchi. The game continues playing after you stop playing. And when you come back on, you may find, oh, guess what? Your colony is under siege from all these things. What are you going to do now? Oh, guess what? A couple of your people died already. You know, you have to really, you know, now it isn't that sudden, but it's like the game continues to play without you, which is fine. But, you know, it was sort of like really frustrating. The biggest part of State of Decay, and especially State of Decay 2, is that every person in your colony has a personality, what they like, what they fear. So you really get attached to them, you know? It's like Zombie Tamagotchi plus The Sims. So you, if you really want to enjoy it, don't get too attached to your characters, because there's a chance they may die.
Yeah, that could be really upsetting if you invest all that time in characters and they get killed off like that.
And you know, I played the original game. It was actually originally on sale for $20. And it was, you got a lot of bang for that $20. It was a quote-unquote big game in that there was so much to do. You know, it's one of those games in which it's priced like an indie game, but plays like a AAA game. I guess you can call it a AA game, actually, now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, DJ?
I think the State of Decay 2 has always looked interesting, but I, like that persistent world thing that you've always warned us about sounds worrying. I hope it's not in State of Decay 2, because I don't want that. I don't want... You know what? I get to play games about once a weekend. I Monday through Friday, I'm generally working, and I'm working on writing about video games, but I hardly ever have time to play them in my personal time. So that is to say, I would have to spend 5 days away from State of Decay 2 every time, and I guarantee you everything I worked towards would be dead by the time I came back.
Well, someone told me that, you know, what you really have to do is set up traps, you know, around the colony and all that stuff. You know, maybe I was playing it, quote-unquote, wrong. But here's the thing about State of Decay 2. It is basically The Walking Dead, the game, in that all the characters now have even more personality and more motivations. So you may have infighting, you know, and I guess to really enjoy it, you have to be willing to have people not like each other within your colony.
Good. I'm going to be the governor.
That does sound like an interesting concept.
Or, you know, if people don't get along, you figure out which one you don't like and just toss them out to the zombies. Yeah, you don't fit in. Get out.
I think that's exactly what the governor would do.
That's kind of stuff sounds fun. That stuff sounds rad. That stuff makes me want to play State of Decay 2 so bad. I'm just really scared about that whole, like... It continues for every minute that you're offline, something is happening in game.
You know, that was the fun of the game, was getting out of your colony and having to build, you know, expand your colony, you know. Oh, we're going to go into this house. Oh, there's some stuff here which I can use to, oh, and there's this stuff, you know, and all that stuff. It really had a sense of being in a world. And I think that's what attracted a lot of people to it, was that feeling of immersion. Which is why it was so upsetting when your colony got run over by zombies. You know, it's like, oh, fuck. You know, I think I had too much investment in my characters. You know, now let's get to the price. I mean, $30 is pretty good deal. I mean, you know, like I said, $20 was a lot for the first game. And I think Microsoft is really banking on this game, you know. I mean, even the Ultimate Edition is only $50. And it's basically coming with the season pass.
Yeah, I mean, $30 isn't much. I'm glad that they're...
And it's also free if you have the Xbox Game Pass to begin with.
Mm-hmm. So that in of itself sounds like a good deal. I'm glad that they're not charging full price for that game. I mean, I do believe that developers should be able to charge what their games are worth. I know that's an unpopular opinion, but it is nice when you see a game like this and it's kind of a budget title.
For me, it's going to be a wait and see. I just want to see the reviews first, because like I said, I played State of Decay. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to reinstall State of Decay because it is backwards compatibility and I have it in my installable games list. Maybe I'll play it again, and maybe this time I'll play a little smarter.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, when you get your guys with good weapons and you have turrets at your colony, you know, turrets and traps, you know, maybe it'll be a lot more playable in that. Yeah, I think once you have your colony firmly secure, you know, in which no amount of zombie rushes are going to really do any damage, I think the game will really open up after that. Because here's the thing, just playing the game for like, you know, like 20, 40 hours, there was a lot I hadn't explored in that world. So, yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Fortnite is now the most watched game on Twitch, doubling PUBG's viewer count from PC Gamer. And I just know that TJ is grinning like a loon because, for those of you who don't know, TJ paid to be in early access for Fortnite. If you hadn't listened to the podcast in the last few months, Twitch viewers have now watched more than 5,000 years worth of Fortnite in the past 2 weeks alone, making it the most popular game on the platform by a long shot. Epic's Battle Royale behemoth is now pulling in more viewers than League of Legends in second place and has double the viewers of PUBG, which is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which was watched the equivalent of 2,500 years over the same period. Fortnite's growth on Twitch is staggering. Through December, around 2,000 channels were streaming the game to 40,000 viewers on average. Now, 6,500 channels are streaming it to nearly 150,000 viewers at any given time. Let me repeat that. 6,500 channels are watching it on a daily basis. Meanwhile, PUBG has gone the other way with a slight dip in both viewers and channels over the same period. Currently, it's averaging 4,000 channels and 65,000 viewers, less viewers than both League of Legends and Counter-Strike GO. It's not surprising. It's not all that surprising. It mimics the game's respective numbers of concurrent players. PUBG's player count has fallen from its peak of more than 3 million in January to a steady 2.7 million, which is still massive, but Fortnite has leapfrogged it by pulling in more than 3.4 million players at a time. PUBG is undoubtedly fun to watch, but perhaps Fortnite's quicker rounds and over-the-top action has helped keeping it win a bigger audience. You can't backflip onto a moving rocket in PUBG or quickscope from the back of that rocket. I will say, though, quicker rounds, you know, of all the games that you have that are streamed, usually it's the ones that have quicker rounds that are the ones that are most watched, not including the MOBAs, okay? MOBAs, as we all know, could have matches that go on for an hour, but people are still hooked on it. You know, those are special beasts. But, you know, a lot of people watch fighting games on Twitch and Mixer because, you know, they're fast and cinematic and, you know, you don't have to waste much time watching a match. So let's refer to our Fortnite expert here. Now, you've been playing these other games. Have you played Fortnite at all in the past few weeks?
Yeah, I've played it off and on here and there. I've never gotten into the Battle Royale, but I have had time to watch a lot of it, and it is fascinating to see how a game plays out in Battle Royale for Fortnite, just because the building mechanic makes so much of a difference in that game.
Here's the thing. That may be another thing, is that PUBG only has one mode. Well, Fortnite also has the co-op mode. And a lot of, you know, there's still a lot of people who love doing co-op.
Uh-huh. But then there's just the variation. There the variation of what you can do in Fortnite is immense. there's not just the guns, there's not just, and they don't have vehicles yet, someday maybe, but being able to build a fort around yourself and build traps and build all sorts of other stuff that, like, you know, subvert and strategize against other players as you go is immensely satisfying to do and see. Like, I've seen dudes that just, like, I actually saw a dude that built up a set of walls that he built a trap, he put weapons down as a bait, and then he threw a grenade that launched a player that tried to collect those weapons into the wall trap that he had built. And it was like, it's clever stuff like that that just allows for so many, like, literally countless possibilities that makes Fortnite just absurd to watch and play. I'm not surprised that it's Rose head and shoulders above the competition.
You know what Fortnite really is, though, don't you?
What's that?
It's Minecraft, but for people who think Minecraft is too kiddy. They're playing Minecraft. And, you know, here's the thing. Minecraft opened up gaming in such a way, I think we're only now feeling the effects of it. I haven't played Minecraft. I've only seen people playing it and all that stuff. But I know that, you know, when you allow people to be creative, like Minecraft did, like Fortnite does, you know, people find ways to have fun with it. They have the way to metagame, you know? I mean, now Minecraft, you can just dick around and just build, you know, and build for the sake of building, which is fine, you know? But a lot of people want to do just more than build. They want to build and have it do something else other than, you know, create.
You can, there are countless different arena type battles. I forgot if it was called spleefing or sploof, or I think it was spleef, where you dig out snow underneath players and they can fall to their deaths. There's ultra hardcore where you have no regeneration and you have one life to live, and it's just, and it's still survival where you have to collect items and resources to get weapons to go kill the other players. There's, you know, there's just so many, and of course, and then there's the Elytra, so you could do flying races, and then there's boating races and horse races and just all sorts of different player versus player games in Minecraft.
That's just it, Scott, though. It gets back to my basic point, is that when you allow gamers to be creative within a game, regardless of what it is, in Minecraft and Fortnite's thing, it's basically, you know, crafting. But when you allow them to be creative, you'd be, you know, the fans will come up with stuff if they really the game.
It's amazing what the players have come up with.
I mean, I'm not even thinking about mods right now. Forget mods. I just mean using the tools within the game itself.
Mm-hmm. Minecraft has some really good tools, not just building stuff, but they have
command
blocks and other programming in there that you can do to control the environment and control outcomes of things that you want to do.
And here's the thing about Fortnite. I don't know if it's been announced yet or not, but it seems to me that it's heading towards being a real force in esports.
It is. A lot of speaking of as someone who does coverage on Twin Galaxies, we do a lot of esports there, and people are hiring. People like Team Solo Mid has a Fortnite player. FaZe just built a Fortnite team. There are no official esports arenas in Fortnite as of yet.
Oh, that'll change.
But people are getting. But people are getting.
Real tournament games.
Yeah, people are getting ready for it. H1Z1, which is not as huge of a game as a Fortnite, but they are building. They're building an arena in that. They're building an official esports arena in that game. And if that
question, how much do you think Epic Games is wishing that esports was a thing 20 years earlier? Because Unreal Tournament would have been the game to play as an esport.
No doubt. I think that QuakeCon right now is sort of taking advantage. I mean, you can't really say that 20 years ago and now, like, they couldn't take advantage of it, because QuakeCon is built around Quake and Doom and all that stuff. That,
but, you know, had Unreal Tournament been around, had esports been around the time of Unreal Tournament and also Quake 3 Arena, oh god, you know, and that thing about that is that I was able to do Unreal, I made my own Unreal Tournament levels.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only thing that keeps that from happening is Epic's willingness to go back to it, which there's no reason for them to right now because Fortnite is doing so damn well.
I'd like to see the original Unreal Tournament coding, but with better graphics. Now, here's the problem with PUBG, though. I already mentioned it before. PUBG is not very conducive to esports because, you know, I remember Yahtzee talking about how it usually ends up with two guys sniping each other across the map. That's not fun. That's not fun to watch.
Yeah, it would have to be a situation where, like, that. A lot of esports organizers have talked about this issue as far as the Battle Royale style goes in the first place. It's difficult to create a fair and balanced esports arena in a style of game that has so much randomness to it. And that is something that they're going to have to work on. Like I said, H1Z1 is Daybreak Studios is working on building an esports arena right now in the H1Z1 Pro League. If that works, you better bet your ass that Epic Games will follow right in tow with Fortnite and copy their model. I mean, they people will say they copied the model of PUBG. They will definitely copy the model of H1Z1 if they figure out how to make a working esports arena.
That's really sad, though. Both PUBG and Fortnite Battle Royale are basically overshadowing the Darwin Project, which
yes.
is definitely made to be an esport, and it is hella fun, but it's not going to get as many people. I mean, I'm pretty sure it could get word of mouth, and I would love to see people discovering the Darwin Project, because it takes what's in Fortnite Battle Royale, and it takes what's in PUBG, and makes it more of a sport, because you have for those of you who don't know, it's basically two people, teams of two, coordinating together on a shrinking map, you know, and last survivor wins. But here's the thing about that, is that when there's only two people left, they have to fight each other. But it might be, if there was the same team, then the people on that same team now have to fight each other. They were friends, and now guess what? It's on.
Yeah, and I'll say this: the only thing that makes a game like Darwin Project from being an esport like Fortnite intends to be is investment. Investor is an investment.
Microsoft invested in it because it's going to be part of that's one of the funny things. When we went to the Microsoft press conference last year, they were showing all these games that are going to be on Xbox One, and we were sort of like, after, wait, what? Age of Conan? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, not Age of Conan, but the new Conan MMO. And I saw the Darwin Project. I said, wait, what? Darwin Project 2? There was a lot of games that were going to be on Xbox One. It was sort of like, what? Wait.
Well, I'm talking about not just investigating in the development of the game, but investing
in... I know what you mean.
Investing in the organizations that would set up those events.
The Darwin Project is going to be on Steam Early Access on March 9, so it's actually coming out now.
Yeah. Like Rainbow Six Siege. From day one, those dudes knew that they were going to be building an esport.
Yep.
And it's done well.
But here's the thing. That's Rainbow Six. It has a name, you know? It's still Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six, and people have very good memories about Rainbow Six. And it is a brand. Darwin Project doesn't have a brand yet.
Yeah, but that's where I'm saying that it's on Microsoft to build that recognition, build that chutzpah, and get those investors and get those organizations in around Darwin and build that esports arena.
But you know what would be nice? You know, there's a lot of games that survive just by having a very dedicated fan base, even if it's small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can see Darwin Project having that, having a very dedicated fan base that just plays it. And by its very nature, you have to have a fan base that is warm and welcoming. Because in that game, you're split up into teams of two. And if you want to win, you better be nice to your friend, the person on your team. You better show them how to win. Because, you know, there's no point in being an asshole like in, say, League of Legends or Dota, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a game in which cooperation is the number one thing. And also I find that games that have a small fan base tend to be a lot friendlier, too, because they want more people to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it comes down to the pros as well. Like, who's willing to invest the time it takes to be the best and play on the arena for this?
Did you watch Darwin Project being played?
I did. I do enjoy it.
It's as fun to watch as it is to play. I think I'd rather watch. I said to the developers, this is more fun watching it than playing it.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, like, unless you've got, like, a crazy-ass guy just sputtering esports broadcast over the entire trailer.
Or just don't do the same thing that Mighty No. 9 did and call your fans worthless geeks and losers. So. Scott, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. I thought you might pipe in about asshole fans.
Not really much to add. I just wish people would grow up, I guess.
Yeah, by the way, looking at the video on the Steam page, they really upped the graphics a bit. It's now you can tell it's more of a release thing because, you know, the one I saw at PAX East, it looked nice, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't there yet. It looks like it's there in terms of graphics now. A lot more shining lighting effects and stuff like that. Like I said, I hope it gets a fan base.
Yeah, it most certainly looks different from a lot of other games, which, I mean, that's what Fortnite had going for it, but Fortnite also has Epic Games going for it.
Well, the Darwin Project also has that thing is that it's in the middle of winter, and you will die if you don't create a fire to warm yourself by, which is also adds the sort of Friday the 13th the game, you know, or Dead by Daylight aspect in that in order to light the fire, people are going to see where you are. You know, lighting a fire to warm yourself is sort of like saying, I'm over here. So if you light that fire, you better find a place to hide.
Mm-hmm. Either that or you just straight up plan on setting a trap by lighting a fire. Put those smoke signals out there.
Fire, and then you put traps all around it because people may see the fire and say, oh, well, but they'll also realize, wait a minute, that could be a trap.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to craft your own weapons too. There's that. Anyways, you know what? People who are listening to this podcast, go look for a Darwin Project, either on Steam or on the Xbox One page, and just check it out. Because that's our shout out for a game for today, Darwin Project. So let me ask you a question: when are you gonna get? Whenever Fortnite becomes a release build, are you gonna get back into it?
Which one?
Fortnite.
Am I going to get back into it? I already am into it. Has like, release build.
No longer early access.
I'm totally into it. I like the only thing keeping me from playing it on the reg is that I've, like I said, I only have 2 days to play games a week.
And you're spending them playing Monster Hunter.
Of course.
Alone. Scott, go help him.
Yeah, I sure will.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. Tell your friends to subscribe to us on iTunes. And we want more comments, damn it. And Ralph can't be the only one who's sending us messages. I know some of you have opinions on this stuff. Like net neutrality. How would you like to pay extra for stuff that you weren't paying extra for? Write about that. Anyways, you can find me at Jonah Falcon at Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Al Fichard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, have fun, play games, yo.
And seriously, you two start monster hunting. get the big dragon.
Which one? There are
dragons in the game.
There are several.
Yeah. So before we go, what was that Colossus type creature again?
It's called the Zora Magdarus.
What is it? Is it a worm? Is it a?
It's literally
a huge, giant magma dragon.
It's an elder dragon that basically has a volcano built into its back.
So it really is Shadow of the Colossus.
Mm-hmm. Right down to the fact that it has little literal points on its body that you have to smack around in order to kill it.
Why am I thinking of How to Train Your Dragon all of a sudden?
There's a giant dragon in it. That's why.
Well, no, because one of them was so big that it had stuff growing on its back.
That's what I'm talking about. Big elder dragon in it that it would eat other dragons.
Yeah, same idea.
Yeah, and the other one in the second movie, there was one that shot ice from its mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that except fire.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to How to Train Your Dragon 3 whenever it comes out, because another one is coming out.
I'm looking forward to How to...
Like a lot of other animated films, this one's really intelligent.
Yeah, I think they're busy doing with a TV show, though, so I don't know.
Yeah, they have the series on Netflix, which is fine, mm-hmm. but I want a full-fledged movie.
I'm looking forward to How to Train Your Dragon Monster Hunter crossover content.
You know, don't put it past Capcom.
Sweet.
You know, actually, you know what I'd like to see? The How to Train Your Dragon MMO.
That would be pretty neat. Wait, didn't they do that once? I feel like they did that once.
No, they did have an MMO that was all about dragons, but it wasn't How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, but like they did something along those that same idea of dragon riding.
I do love dragon riding.
There needs to be more games with McCaffrey. That. Did you read the Anne McCaffrey books? Dragon Riders? Yeah.
I read the Dragon Prince books. I love reading all the Dragon books.
Yeah. I actually had the C64 game, Dragon Riders of Pern.
Mm, cool.
It's interesting. Anyways, we will see you next week.